Welcome to Share the Bytes, Episode 5, IDE Ideas. Well, hello there, Corey. How are you? It's been a while.
Very well, Ian. How about you?
I'm doing fantastic. Got a lot of news.
Hook us up.
Okay, well, for those people who are watching who want to subscribe to our podcast outside of just our website, they can now find us on iTunes. We have now joined the giant monolith that is Apple. And for those of you who found us on iTunes, please check out our website, sharethebytes.com. We've got more content coming up. Well, so yeah, that's the big news.
Okay.
Yep, that's what I've been up to for the last couple weeks. Oh, and also had a guest on our last episode. Episode 4, This is Android. A friend of mine named Jack from the Berkeley Linux Users Group. He talked about his Android programs, Squirrel Cam, Droidian eMusic, and Archive Droid. Great programs, great platform, and so I'm hoping to have him back again sometime soon.
Very nice, very nice. You said something about getting some more people, too, from the LUG group over there, I believe.
Yes. There's quite a few people interested in coming on. There's a guy who's pretty much an expert at compiling deb packages. He refuses to use a GUI interface. Everything is command line. And then a PHP expert.
Oh, man, I might have to get in on that one, too.
yeah, so I'm looking forward to it. And again, Jack also has the new Nexus S Android phone, and he wants to bring that on and talk about it. And what's cool is the Nexus S is the phone that Google sent up into space, 7 of them.
Wait, was that like one of those toss shit into space and hope someone finds them in 50 years kind
of? No, 6 of them came back down, at least that they can find.
Oh,
and there's video of them on Google's website. It's really cool. And what they used is the phone to record all the accelerometer and gyroscope data as it was falling through the sky.
Nice.
Yep. Nice. So they've got the full video of it going up through the clouds, hitting the atmosphere, looking at space. You can see the little Android doll sitting there looking into space. Then the balloon pops, and then the Android doll flies off into space. As the phone and the cameras come tumbling back down to Earth.
Nice. Yeah. And that's not on the actual Google, like Google.com. What's the Google webpage? I've never been there before.
I don't know exactly for the Nexus S phone. Well, I mean, if you do go to developer.google.com or just type in Android into Google, it's the first link, and there will have a nice picture of a little gingerbread guy there with an Android head. And then if you go to developers' phones, it'll show the G2 phone, and it'll show the Nexus S. And I think with some searching, you can find those videos. And if you ever go to YouTube, you can type in Nexus S. They're the first things that pop up.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm hoping to talk about that, his experiences with the phones, compare how it works with the now old Nexus One. And now we want to get to the real meat of this episode and talk about programming language and specifically IDEs and really what experience we've had with programming on platforms, what we've liked, what we didn't like, and what we would recommend.
Okay.
Yep. So I noticed talking about your application for the tablet, you're using GTK. I know for Qt development, there's a Qt IDE. And again, for those who aren't familiar, Qt is the development platform that KDE is based on. And a whole bunch of software companies use it for their programs as well, both Windows programs, Mac programs, and Linux. And so I was kind of wondering, going from Qt and now to GTK, your experience, how did you program it? Did you use an IDE? Was it all command line based? Tell us.
Well, at the time, I was semi-laid up with an accident, let's say, at that point. And so I only had one wrist available. But that's no real excuse. I just figured I'd throw that out. I threw together on my laptop at one point the Ubuntu, and everybody loves Ubuntu, and didn't want to hassle around with trying to figure out the best IDE, so I just went with NetBeans. NetBeans is a Java-based development environment, which is really kind of funny because it's a Java application designed primarily to make it easy for you to write Java applications. So if it ever gets smart enough, we'll just let it go and it'll take over the world using Java.
That almost sounds like the chicken and the eggs paradox.
Yeah, it is. It makes you wonder which came first. But it comes with plugins for C++, PHP, HTML on top of that. You kind of need you kind of need PHP and HTML. They kind of go together.
Uh-huh.
And there's a bunch of other plugins you can get for it. At the time, it wasn't that big of an issue. The one complaint I've had about it is it's being a Java-based app, it's very, very resource-heavy.
Uh-huh.
It's a lot more top-heavy than a natively compiled application. So, you know, the usual trade-off. It's not that big a problem as long as you're not trying to design, I'm assuming, this huge, ginormous thing. NetBeans, it's got a lot of great features that work really, really well. And for anybody who wants to just pick up something and go, it's pretty much the go-to IDE, unless you do Windows coding, and then that's Windows domain. Windows has its own little world.
Yes, yeah. So. A nice Visual Studio.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I have to say, I use Visual Studio for work. Since it's a Windows platform, and again, there are some things that don't work well, and there's some things that work very well. Again, it always depends on application, what you really want to do. Going back to the IDEs, more specifically Linux, you're talking about NetBeans and Java. My experience with that is with Eclipse, another Java compiler, and I got started on it when I started programming for Android. And I really wanted to try it out because Google officially supports using the Eclipse IDE with its Android SDK. They offer a plugin, and supposedly has great reviews. It works for Windows, Linux, and Mac. Well, when I tried to use it, I couldn't get it to work. And I found out the problem was because I was running a 64-bit version of Linux. Eclipse works with the 64-bit version of Linux. However, Eclipse plus the Android SDK plugin didn't play nicely. I did a little bit of research on the internet. Some people have said they've got it working, changing environment variables, path names, the whole nine yards. I said that's just a little bit too much for my taste. Granted, I like to get pretty serious into Linux, going command lines and in the configuration files, but I wanted to get started quickly. I didn't want to have to deal with this, so I stuck with the command lines and I just use ant. And that's basically the generic Java compile, and as long as there's the default XML file in the Android source directory, it works perfectly. Now, granted, the trade-off with that is with Eclipse, the nice thing about it is that when you're typing, it auto-completes the code that you're typing. So if you've got a particular class, it highlights the class variables, setters and getters, functions.
You have fewer syntax errors.
Exactly. I mean, with having to type this out in a text editor, I've got to remember everything, or I've got to look it up, and typically things don't work just right or work at all on the first compile, and it says, you've missed this, or this class does not work here. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the trade-off there.
Yeah.
But I have gotten it working with a 32-bit version of Linux. Works great, and highly recommend it for people who want to give it a shot.
Very nice.
Yeah. And so I know when we were talking earlier about IDEs, and again, your experience with NetBeans, and again, there's a lot of out there, and we've just talked about Java, but there's IDEs for C, C++, the whole nine yards. Mm-hmm. Now, people who are usually hardcore programmers, they kind of like to go for the make files. That's the true way of programming. You're not a programmer until you've written your own make file. At least that's what I've been told.
Yeah.
And I said, well, that's great. And make file is great. One mistake that I made, and it was a pretty noob mistake at the time, was make files are very, very picky with how you format them. And whenever you find instructions with make files, they specifically say at the very beginning, tab over your parameters list. And they say, don't add five spaces, add a tab. So guess what I did, being the coder who says, it's all or nothing, I'm going for it. Well, I added the five spaces, not the tab. And it just wouldn't compile. And I'm going to the boards, why won't this compile? It looks right. I'm looking at the example. It looks the same.
Mm-hmm.
And then I finally, okay, I'm going from scratch. And then it worked. And I'm saying, well, what's different? Well, turns out it was that tab. Spaces do not equal tab. So that's a make file. The best way of getting started with make files, that's a really hard one. I would say just do a Google search for it. Look at a lot of examples. Unfortunately, it's not one of those things that's very easy, at least from my perspective, just to comprehend right off the bat. I've had to look at quite a few pieces of code, and sometimes I'm still not 100% familiar with it, but I've gotten enough of it to work.
Yeah.
So if you can grab examples, that's great. And again, the reason why you go for a make file is that way you don't have to constantly type out all the compile parameters and functions on the command line every single time. It's just in one file.
And if any of you have ever done command line compiling, you know, when you first start out with the basic, it's just GCC-O blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's about this long and your terminal is about this long. You know, no problem. But where makefiles come into handy, or even if you're a GUI person, just straight up cover all IDE control, it can get very complicated. And really, makefiles are more like a scripting language. But
they're complicated,
and they have a huge amount of flexibility, which makes them wonderful if used properly.
Yep. Again, you want to include a whole bunch of different libraries and then classes and binaries and other people have given you. That's where you put it in the makefile. It also kind of speeds things up, because if you do everything on the command line, it compiles everything every single time. A makefile keeps track of changes, so it only compiles what has changed. So that's the real power there. Another IDE that I played around with very early on when I was working with the Allegro library, which is a video game library, open source, I was using KDevelop. And again, this was during my KDE days. This is a great IDE for the Linux platform. It incorporates KEdit, just their basic text editor, and then just puts a nice skin around it and functions, so a whole debugging terminal. It keeps track of classes for you, so it auto-fills. And if there's anybody from like the Windows side who's used Visual Studio, particularly Visual Studio C++, then the way you add libraries to be compiled with your code is very similar in KDevelop as it is in Visual Studio. That's the nice thing. You just go to the project properties, there's a little tab that says libraries to compile, and then you just type out the library that you want to include.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all good.
Very nice.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think I've done any actual Windows compiling in a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
I've pulled the Express versions off the internet, which if you don't know, any of you want to do Windows Windows coding, Microsoft has the Express versions of their IDEs available. They're missing something from the full versions, but for the average person, it's not that big a deal.
Yep. Don't miss much. I just downloaded the latest Visual Basic Express 10, mm-hmm. 2010. And I think something it said that you couldn't do is you couldn't program with the Express versions. You couldn't program Windows services. Some of the help functions weren't available. Some of the deeper level codes and libraries weren't available. But doing a little bit more research on that, people who are familiar with working with Visual Studio and Visual Studio Express, they said that there are very easy workarounds. So it's not like you download the Express and you're locked out to these particular functions. There are ways of still getting them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, if you're from the Windows world, yeah, highly recommend it. Go for the Express. They give you a lot. In fact, when I program for the Windows platform, I come from a VB background. Say what you might about VB. Actually, I think it's, to be honest, I really do believe it's a great environment to program. For rapid prototyping, you need a GUI. It works well.
And then I missed the days of VB6 when you could just throw it together and call it good.
Yeah. And then if you really think about it, the way Microsoft has done it, the whole Visual Studio platform is .NET anyway. So whether it's VB or VC or C#, I should say, or Java, you're all calling the same .NET libraries. There's really almost no difference. I mean, I can look at C# code and instantly translate to VB .NET code.
Hmm.
I mean, it's that easy. And then you do a little bit of research. I mean, there's all these flame wars that go up, which one's better, which one compiles faster. And, you know, I found a couple of sites that say, hey, as long as you program the code properly, that you don't always rely on the garbage collector. And believe me, garbage collectors make it nice, so that way you don't have to unload memory every single time.
Yeah.
But if you code properly, you load and you unload memory, then after compile, your C code and your VB code, when it's compiled to machine code, is almost identical.
Hmm.
So again, I think to give credit where credit is due, Windows, I think, did a very good job with the .NET framework in making it pretty much universal across all those code types.
Okay. Huh. I did not know that. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Learn something. Every now and then Microsoft comes up with something good.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm just waiting until I get my hands on the new Kinect and plug that into OpenCV. It's going onto my Linux box.
Yeah. The hacking on that went ape after that came out.
So, speaking of Kinect, it's now our time for our pick of the show.
Okay.
I've got mine. Do you have yours?
Go for it.
Okay. Well, mine is, again, for the Android phone, and it is SoundMeter. And I like this particular program because it just measures the decibel levels using the microphone on the phone. And this was particularly cool to use because I was walking through the Westfield Mall in downtown San Francisco, going through the stores. Most of the places, including the food court, the decibel level was somewhere around 60 decibels, which is normal conversation level listening. You're not going to go deaf by it by any means. Granted, it's slightly stressful. But then I would go into a couple of stores and the music would just be cranked up so loud. And I'm thinking, the people who work here must be going deaf. So I fired up SoundMeter to see if that was true, and sure enough, the music was peaking around 75 to 80 decibels, and that's the sound of city traffic right next to the roadway.
Nice.
So I kind of feel sorry for the employees in those stores, but now I know. So I think one of these days I'm going to go up and show them, saying, you know, this is really what you're doing to your hearing. Cherish it.
Well, my app of the week is, so for those people who feel the frustration of or are limited to only one computer to work with, hopefully you've got a powerful enough one. An alternate solution for those who don't know is running a virtual machine. So let's say you've got a Linux box, or you've got a Windows box, or you've got a Mac box, and especially in the Macintosh's case, you can't afford Parallels for some reason. I think the latest version is $70 right now, but there's an alternative solution, and it's called VirtualBox. It's www.virtualbox.org, exactly how you think it would be spelled. It's a cross-platform, not Java-based, virtual machine that is actually very easy to set up. I think most common Linux distributions come with it already set up in the repository. Uh-huh. If No, actually, I lied. They've got it there, and it just bumps out a warning. You actually have to go to the VirtualBox website and download their package in order to install it. But like I said, it's cross-platform. Due to licensing, it doesn't do OS X on anything else except OS X, but everyone's familiar with that problem.
Yeah.
And it's as close to Parallels on anything as you can get. And the only reason I compare it to Parallels is I have been doing a lot of – I've had to work with it constantly at work, and it's been a pain in the butt, but it's better than running two computers. So, yes, virtualbox.org.
Okay, cool. So you're saying as long as I have a Mac running OS X, I can run three different operating systems on one machine?
Yeah.
Side by side?
You can even run OS X server on it, apparently. Although I would highly discourage running more than one at a time, because you are actually trying to run multiple computers. And unless you've got like a terahertz computer and 16 billion gigabytes of RAM, you're going to be suffering.
Shouldn't you just buy a PlayStation 3 for that matter?
Yeah, you may as well. And then and then you can crack it like they've got it and run. What do they got? They had Yellow Dog or BSD on it, I think, this last week. Yep. So, best app I've found. I especially found it very useful when I wanted to try out a new Linux distribution and didn't really feel like formatting my computer. It is also, too, for that matter, very handy for testing out boot CDs. If you custom boot CDs, etc. So.
All right.
But I'm sure if you're doing custom boot CDs, you've already got your own setup going. So we'll leave it at that.
Very good. Very good. Okay. All right. Well, I want to thank everybody for joining us today for another great show. And if you have any questions about the show or for me, you can email us at qnc@sharethebytes.com, also known as questions and comments. You can email Corey at sharethebytes.com. Very good. Okay, so that's it for this show, and we hope to catch everybody later. Hope you enjoy. And again, remember, you can now find us on iTunes. Just type in Share the Bytes.
And I will close my door the next time.
That's okay. We just want to see who walks in next time.
Oh, okay. Maybe
I'll need a face with the voice.
Maybe I'll get like four cameras, and then I can have like we can have a wide view angle from this end and. Really drastic. Oh man.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you later, Corey. Don't work too hard.
Oh, you too, Ethan. You too.
Bye.
Bye.